everybody. Welcome back to the Misfits and Mysteries podcast. We're going to take you through the world's wackiest phenomena, from Bigfoot and aliens to psychology and history. We're here every Thursday, so remember to check us out. We're your hosts, Emmy.
And Steve.
So, Steve, what are we talking about today?
So, we're going to talk about reincarnation and mummy curses.
So, you've been watching some fun movies lately?
Yeah, I actually just watched Snakes on a Plane, which we talked about, I think, last episode. I hadn't seen that, and it was game-changing. That's a phenomenal film.
It's such a phenomenal film.
It's so funny. It's so well acted, too. I love Samuel Jackson in that role. It's so funny. I also just love how snakes just don't act like that.
Yeah, it's...
It's a silly one.
Yeah.
Every second of it was so good. I highly recommend it. I wish I'd seen it sooner. Maybe I'll update my list of greatest horror movies, or like greatest bad horror movies. I'll definitely be up there. It was super funny.
Yeah, it seems totally up your alley.
I also watched another movie last night, actually, called Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And that was actually really good. I don't know if that was scary in the 80s, but I would not call it a scary movie. It was a weird, campy movie. It was a fun, strange film. I enjoyed it a lot.
That's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
All right. Should we jump in?
Yeah, let's jump on in.
All right. All right, Steve. So today we're going to be talking about something pretty spooky. It is what is widely considered as one of the most convincing cases of reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
So have you heard of Dorothy Eady?
No, I have not.
All right. So you're going to be taken on a wild ride right now.
All right. That's exciting.
So Dorothy was born in London in 1904.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was a toddler, she was 3 years old. She fell down the stairs and had like a really bad fall.
Mm-hmm.
And she was declared dead by the family physician. And then an hour later, when the doctor returned to like prepare her body or whatever, he came back and she was sitting up playing with toys, like totally fine. And like he did an examination and she was completely fine.
Oh my God, I would be so frightened.
So that in and of itself, she literally came back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, her parents noticed like a huge change in her behavior and she began to always talk about going home, and she didn't really recognize her room anymore and was just kept saying over and over again, I want to go home, I want to go home. And her parents really didn't understand it. And this went on for years. This was also happening at school. So she went to a very Catholic school. Her family was very Catholic. And she was refusing to sing the Christian hymns. So she got kicked out of her Christian school. She got kicked out of Christian mass and was kind of really isolated because she was just like so different. Because she was banned from school, her family started taking her a lot to the British Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where shit starts getting real.
Okay.
So they take her to the British Museum and she sees the Egyptian exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately starts speaking in a different language.
Oh my God, that's weird.
And is screaming in this Egyptian language. And she was so excited and like kissing the feet of the pharaohs. And she was going up to all these pictures and like, this is it. Like, this is my home. But she also is really confused because she's looking at these pictures of these ruins and is like, all right, there used to be a garden there. Like, where are all the trees? It's starting to become apparent that she may have had a past life as someone living in Egypt.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's actually wild. I mean,
yeah.
There's no way she could have spoken ancient Egyptian.
Yeah, I mean, no one around her knew that language, so it's not clear exactly if that's what it was or
Yeah, I mean,
what
I
she's
guess it'd be
saying,
hard to
but
prove what she was speaking because no one can speak it.
exactly.
Because
And
we can't speak hieroglyphics.
yeah. So she just kept saying, like, these are my people, whatever. So she kept going back to the British Museum because she just loved being in this Egyptian exhibit. And there was this one Egyptologist. Is that the word?
That actually is for, yeah.
Okay. So he noticed that she was just like at the museum all the time. And he was like, do you want to work with me? So he started teaching her hieroglyphics. And he said that he's never seen anyone learn the language quicker. And she was picking up things that he hadn't even taught her. So it was almost like she was relearning it.
That's crazy. It's like she already knew it.
Yeah, it's like she already knew it. So that was crazy. And she kind of starts like spiraling into like this life where all she can talk about or think about is going back to Egypt. So while she's at the office at the British Museum, she meets this Egyptian man and she falls in love with him, and they go to Egypt to get married. And they have a son and they name him Seti in honor of this pharaoh that died a long time ago. But their marriage soon started to crumble because Dorothy was just so obsessed with this pharaoh who she thought she had loved a long time ago, whose name happened to be Pharaoh Seti, which is the name of her son.
Why did she name her son the name
I
of Jim?
maybe that's like that was kind of weird to me too, but sometimes you name your son after the father. But still like kind of weird because she's so obsessed with this
That's
guy.
so weird. So just, I guess, to interject, out of curiosity, was this a pharaoh that was known about, or was it a pharaoh that was discovered later? Because if it was a pharaoh that was discovered later, that'd be even crazier.
So it was a pharaoh that was known about and she had read about, and she kind of recognized him and was like, oh, that used to be my husband.
So she was royalty then.
Yes. She, well, okay, so going back into her past life, there had been this 14-year-old girl who was really poor and like a vegetable seller. And Pharaoh Seti was enchanted by her beauty and they became lovers. And because she wasn't royalty, because she was poor and could never actually be his wife, she ended up committing suicide.
Oh, geez.
And Pharaoh Seti vowed to never forget her and was upset about this. So that's who she thinks that she was. And the reason why she thinks that is because when she was 14, the same age as this girl, she started having dreams about Pharaoh Seti. And she claims that at the age of 14, she was quote unquote ravished by his spirit.
Wow,
In
that's interesting.
a consensual way.
That's intriguing.
So, ghost sex?
Isn't that what like a succubus? Is it a succubus?
Yes, I
But
think
doesn't
so.
that kill you though, I think? I don't really know the lore behind that.
We'll have to explore that.
Yeah, that could be a topic.
Yeah, she claims that she had sex with his spirit when she was 14, so that's why she thinks that she was this girl.
That's interesting.
So her husband was like, okay, you're like way too obsessed with this Seti guy. We're getting a divorce. So they ended up not staying married, and I don't think she ever married again.
I mean, probably pretty hard.
Yeah, she felt like she was married to this ghost, probably.
Yeah, she's married to someone who died like probably thousands of years ago.
Yeah. So this is kind of what I think is the craziest part is she then moved to Egypt permanently and was working in Egypt as a archaeologist. Mm-hmm. And she would use her memory to find ancient ruins.
Oh, that's awesome. So she probably was the best Egyptologist out there.
Yeah. And she, remember, she didn't really go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And was pretty uneducated on all things that were not Egypt, but and never went to college, anything. But she would go around and be like, okay, I remember, like, in this garden, you go through this tunnel and you'll find the booby trap room. And it was rooms that they had never discovered before, places that they had never been.
Oh my God.
And she always got it right. So to this day, she has like these journals, and Egyptologists use her journals to like find new spots.
I'm usually skeptical about things, but I can't even be. I there's no explanation for that.
Exactly.
You can't be lucky 100% of the time.
Yeah, and especially on something like that.
Yeah, that's insane. I'd say you could probably chalk up some of her findings to luck, but if she's batting like 100, if she's batting 1,000, it's impossible to, impossible. How do you disprove that? Like, how the hell would she know?
Yeah, and there were some locations, like these locations where they didn't even know that there was anything there. Like, it was just a patch of sand, and mm-hmm. she'd be like, all right, I'm pretty sure it's right here. And they dig there, and they'd find, like, an entire temple.
Jesus Christ. That is one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. I've heard of other reincarnation stories. I've never heard this one, though.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, that's actually, like, how? The crazy thing is that this started when she was, like, a toddler, right? It's not even like she could have learned about this stuff in school.
Yeah.
But even exactly. if she did, it wouldn't matter, because she, like, just found things no one else could.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The kind of interesting thing to me about this story is people talk about past lives, like, oh, maybe you have like a trauma from a past life or something, but she fully re-entered this consciousness. She became her past self, pretty much.
Because I've heard stories. I don't really remember the full thing, so I'm probably going to get a bunch of details wrong right here. But I think it was World War II, someone who died in World War II. And there was, like, this was kind of recently. I remember this from when I was a kid. There was something on, like, I don't remember where, but I saw it on TV on one of those, like, cable channels. Mm-hmm. But they did some story about this kid who, I think his grandfather died in World War II. Kid was, like, a toddler, right? Maybe 5 years old. And this kid just, like, randomly started getting like this PTSD and all these like things. He knew things about World War II that couldn't know. Like he was like citing people's names who you wouldn't know said yeah. stuff. Cause it's not like,
it's I not, think like, I remember the story that you're talking about.
Yeah. And then they did something like, I think they went back to somewhere in the water in Japan or like the Pacific where he fought. And the kid basically, I think the soul was like freed or something. And basically the kid just lived a normal life after that. But it was like the kid was finally at peace. And I guess the soul or whatever moved on to heaven or wherever we go. It's just crazy.
Ugh, that's crazy. It's like kind of scary.
The really scary thing about it is like, what if your soul becomes trapped in someone's body and then they never do anything to free it? You're just stuck.
That's true.
That's a real scary thought.
And I wonder, like, how would it get into that specific body? Why Dorothy Edie thousands of years later?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think as Brian was saying last time about the soul, so he said, or he thought with, like, energy cannot be created or destroyed, so if we have a soul, it has to go somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just something we don't understand. And yeah. I forget where I learned about this. I think I was watching some YouTube videos about ghosts, which we can get into later maybe. But someone was saying about how it's not crazy to think that there could be spirits of some sort out there. Because if you told people, like, 300 years ago, let's say, or evil creatures that are poisoning us called bacteria, and all you do to get rid of them is washing your hands, they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're a lunatic. So it's really not that crazy to think that there could be something we just haven't found yet.
Yeah. No, and there's so much that we don't know. And actually, just looking into like the theories around reincarnation, there's this psychiatrist and professor at UVA, Jim Tucker, who studies this stuff a lot. And he has a theory for how reincarnation could exist. And I can take you through it. It's
Sure.
not, I don't understand it that much because it's all about quantum physics and I've taken physics since like 10th grade.
I haven't
But
since high school, so
yeah,
it's really
so this is gonna be like quantum physics for dummies times 10. So his whole thing is there's in quantum physics, at the most basic level, the smallest particles, protons and electrons, only events involving protons and electrons only occur once they are observed. Okay. So the theory is that the material world around us is derived from consciousness, not the other way around. So if consciousness creates the material world, then it's not, basically, consciousness does not need a living brain to exist. So consciousness can be floating around, and as you said, material cannot be destroyed or created. So it's just floating around, and then the only way that it can be brought into the world is if it goes into a new person's brain.
Because it's like a transfer of energy. So I guess,
Exactly.
yeah, that, I mean, that is not too outlandish. If
Yeah.
we accept that energy cannot be created or destroyed, it's like transferred, then,
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I'm not a physicist, so I could be completely off base on this, but
Yeah.
if that's the case, then it's not crazy to think that maybe there's only a finite amount of consciousnesses you could actually have, and they just recycle.
Which is pretty crazy. The only thing about that, though, is how do you explain a growing population?
Well, think of all the people that have died in the past.
So you, oh.
Because th think about it, there we humans have existed for, I think, if I remember correctly, about 50,000 years. So I'm just thinking, like, I imagine, even though we're at like 7 point something billion now, or almost 8 billion, I imagine more than 8 billion people have died in the past.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, and
That's
also if
very true.
you look at death rates, for all I know, maybe babies when they're first born don't have a conscience yet, right? This is a theory I just came up with right now, a hypothesis, right?
Yeah.
So maybe when babies are born, they don't have full consciousness, and the reason that in these two scenarios we talked about, it was onset when they were toddlers, is maybe you get your consciousness when you're a toddler, right? Because maybe someone dies or died, maybe it's like everyone's queued up, right? And maybe the person that was Egyptian for the little girl, maybe she had a bunch of bums who never achieved whatever it was to get her released, and finally she just landed this little girl who died, and then an hour later she occupied it. It could be something crazy like that. Who knows?
Or alternatively, she had this past consciousness, which for a lot of us could be repressed, but then when she got knocked around the head, it unlocked it and brought it to the surface.
Yeah, that's possible. You know what's a weird thought that haven't pondered in a while, but have you ever thought about what if you're the only real person in the universe, and once you die, no, my boy's like, what if once you die, everything just ends? You can never, that's a theory you can never prove, because you can never prove that you're the one true person. But what if there's only one person, and this is all just their consciousness, like everything they perceive, and once they're gone, what if everything's over?
You know, that could be it.
The problem is that's a non-falsifiable theory, because you can't prove it's wrong, because you can't prove that you're the only true person, you know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting
Well,
thing to think about.
I've thought about like what if you're just like a piece of dust floating around space, just like having a hallucination.
You could
But
tell we used to smoke marijuana.
it's almost scary. Wait, what'd you say?
Said you could tell we used to smoke pot.
Yeah. But it's almost scarier what you just said. If all of the physical stuff in the world is here, but all of the people are fake.
Like, what if I'm the only real person? And once I'm dead, everything just ends. But
yeah,
it's a weird thing because in theory, if only one person's real and this is just their consciousness and everything's fake, then it's not a scary thought because you'll just stop existing. You'll have never actually existed. But it's just such a weird thought. Like, I
no, it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. What's also interesting, and this is like a whole separate episode in itself, but mm-hmm. is near-death experiences.
Yes.
I actually listened to this other podcast called the Past Lives Podcast,
mm-hmm.
and I'd recommend it. And it just talks about near-death experiences and reincarnation, but mostly near-death experiences. And just talks about people who went through a terrible accident and were like in a coma. Mm-hmm. And while they were in their coma, they saw the other side and like unlocked the key to life or whatever. And then they come back and
mm-hmm.
it's awesome.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is with near-death experiences, with your fight or flight. I'm saying like someone like goes in a coma, just like near death, where you have like your like fight or flight response. Like adrenaline's an insane thing. There are stories in World War II of people who like were being under enemy fire. I forget who it was. There was this one soldier who I think he got a Medal of Honor. He definitely got a Purple Heart. But one of his like fellow soldiers was shot, and basically this man ran through. And his adrenaline was pumping so hard that he had enough bullet wounds that he shouldn't have been alive. And he rescued a bunch of people and just carried them on his back to a medic. The story goes that the medic looked at him and said, "You should be dead." But his adrenaline was pumping so much that it didn't matter that he had all these bullet holes in him.
Oh my God.
And the guy survived. This is what the human body can do to survive.
Yeah.
Is insane. Adrenaline's a really interesting thing.
And you hear about those moms who are able to lift up a car to save their child
mm-hmm. I mean I
underneath or something.
Yeah.
Oh.
Have you ever like had an experience like that with adrenaline rush?
Not anything close to
I have. Actually, this is a story I never really thought I was going to talk about, but it's actually right before I had mono, so it's really good it happened when it did, because I probably would have lost my spleen and died if it happened a week later. But before I knew I had mono, and before I was really sick, my uncle was a craftsman, right? So he was helping us fix something on our balcony, and it was just the two of us, and we had to get this 300-pound piece of like wood or something up on this balcony. And basically how it worked is we had these ladders, and this is really, in retrospect, it's really dumb, but right, we had this ladder, we roped off the thing, and this thing is about 300 pounds, and we had to pull it up, this ladder basically on ropes. And we were tugging it, and it was pulling us hard back. And I saw him, like, I looked like my uncle was going to go over. And I swear, I just dug in and just fucking took the whole weight of the thing and just pulled it up.
Oh, my God.
I thought I was going down. Like, I was going to go down, too. I don't think I would have died. I would have gotten severely injured, though. But it's crazy. You got the adrenaline rush, and then you feel awful afterwards because you just get, like, a real high, and then you just dip down real quick.
Oh, my God.
You have, like, insane amounts of strength. And body was just dead after that. They use every ounce of my power to not die, just to keep that freaking wood plank up.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never really had an experience like that. I have definitely gotten like a adrenaline kick when I'm running.
Oh yeah, the runner's high is also amazing.
Yeah.
I used to get that when I ran in high school, but it's like that's the weirdest thing. The runner's high is like an out of body experience.
It can be, yeah.
I've had it where I've been on, like, when I used to run cross country, there were times where I would just be running, and then this stuff's really interesting to me, but I always felt like sometimes I'd just be running, I'd zone out, and then I'd sort of feel like I was watching myself run, which is fucking wild.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like a meditative experience for
someone. Oh, it is. It is. And it's like that weird point where it's just between exhaustion and like fine. And you just don't feel anything when you hit the runner's high.
Yeah.
Apparently the runner's high is also really good for your brain. I don't know if it's true, actually. This was some guy, some anti-drug guy, came to my high school and gave us his lecture. It could be total bullshit. But he did tell us that apparently the runner's high is like the best high you can get. It's apparently like improves brain function, all this stuff. To be honest, this guy's job was to convince us not to do drugs. So like this could be all bullshit, but
Like,
that one thing stuck with me.
don't do drugs, just exercise.
I know. I mean, like the dopamine you get from exercising is great, but maybe like who knows?
Yeah. Well, I've also heard about meditative experiences where people can leave their body and go into another room and see a number that someone had written on the wall or something and like come back and tell them.
That's so weird. Like maybe when you're in those states, perhaps your spirit separates from your body a little bit and then comes back.
Yeah. Well, you also hear about those monks who can like not eat for weeks when they're meditating. They just kind of like go into hibernation and like leave
Yeah.
their body a little bit.
It's really fascinating. There's so much stuff we don't know the answer to, and we probably never will, at least not in
No.
our lifetimes.
This is my favorite topic, the reincarnation, past life stuff.
It's just such an interesting thing because we just don't know and we can't prove anything.
Yeah.
All
And
right.
it also just makes me feel better about death.
Yeah, I don't think it just ends anymore. The older I get, the less I think that.
It seems like a cop out, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that nothing can be created or like energy can't be created or destroyed. If our soul is our energy, then it has to go somewhere, you know?
Yeah. All right.
Transition, bum, zoo,
Zoo
tycoon, zoo tycoon. I love Zoo Tycoon.
Tycoon.
Did you ever play Zoo Tycoon as a kid?
Zoo Tycoon was my favorite game, Steve.
I mean, I still play Zoo Tycoon. I was about to say I was great at it, but no, I still play it. I still play
How
Zoo
do you
Tycoon.
it still works on your computer?
Well, not this Mac, but I have an old computer that I can play Zoo Tycoon on. I still got the CDs.
All right, well, next time.
Yeah, we're gonna play. What if we just w we should just have a Twitch live. We should make a Twitch channel and just live stream us playing Zoo Tycoon. I love it. I
Don't know how interesting that would be, but
Yeah, but
you know
like
what?
who cares? Zoo
Yeah.
Tycoon's the shit. I actually got Planet Zoo on my computer, which is like the people that created it, they created this new game, Planet Zoo, and it's like pretty sweet and it's pretty HD. But it's a little bit more difficult and comp. It's like not as easy to pick up as Zoo Tycoon. So I still go back to Zoo Tycoon a lot. All right, so let's get back into what we're actually going to talk about. All right, so I guess in a similar vein to your story, especially, we're going to now talk about mummy curses, specifically the curse of the pharaohs. And
Okay.
that's basically the curse associated with King Tut. So I know that there's a logical explanation for a lot of the deaths and things that happen to people. But that's not as fun to talk about, so I'll bring that up in the end, just because we're not biased and I want to tell the truth, you know. But yeah, so basically, how this all started was King Tut was actually, in terms of Egypt's history, really an insignificant king. He got the throne when he was 9, and he only ruled. I think he actually started ruling when he was like 12 or 14, and only lived 10 more years after that. So he didn't really do much for Egypt as like a nation. But what's super significant about him is that the discovery of his tomb, his tomb was the most intact that they'd found at the time, right? It had all the stuff. Basically, the myth goes that there's a famous etching that everyone claims exists where it says, "Cursed be those that disrupt the rest of Pharaoh. They that break the seal of his tomb shall meet death by a disease which no doctor can diagnose." Right? That was allegedly inscribed. That's what all the things were reported. So, what the myth really started was, so November 26, 1922, British archaeologist Howard Carter, which is important to remember, Howard Carter discovered King Tut's tomb. And
Okay.
inside, there were two life-size statues of the pharaoh, which were decked out in gold sandals, gold crowned, and stylized cobras. The cobras are important because what happened later that night is Carter's pet canary, who accompanied him on these, got killed by a cobra that night. And the local workers were like, "This is a bad omen. Canary was King Tut's ghost warning us not to bother him any further, we should stop. But obviously, a lot of money involved. And he basically needed this for the funding. He was funded by George Herbert, also known as Lord Carnarvon. I don't know how he got Carnarvon if his real name's Herbert, okay? But that's besides the point.
We're just going to go with it.
Yeah. So this is where it gets interesting. We're going to talk about the actual curse before we go into some of the explanations. And one of the more recent explanations is actually pretty wild. So I'm excited to jump into that. Okay. So we have the first... So the 12 victims who were, like, well covered in this, we're going to go over. There's dozens more, but unfortunately, they're all natives to Egypt, and they're workers. So there's no real accounts of them, because I don't really think the English gave a shit about them back then, which is kind of a shame. Mm-hmm. But these are the most interesting ones. So the first person to die from this expedition was Lord Carnarvon, right? So he financed the expedition, and he was one of the first people to enter the tomb. So he made Carter seal up the tomb when he discovered it again, so he could be there to check it out. A few months later, after he had been one of the first people in the tomb, he was back in England, right, where he was from, and he was shaving, and he accidentally cut a mosquito bite that ended up turning into a blood infection, and he died days later of severe pneumonia, infection of the skin.
Mosquito bite?
Yeah, so from a mosquito bite that was he nicked while shaving with a razor.
Oh.
So the media freaked out about this and blew out of proportion. Like the New York Times did about the curse of the mummy, or the curse of the pharaoh, as they called this one. The curse of the mummy is a movie, it's not a real curse. but the one thing about Carnarvon is he was older and he also had a really weakened immune system. So it's very, very coincidental that it happened, but it's like, out of all the people that died, I mean, he was the one that would have died from a mosquito bite anyway, probably.
Yeah, but still weird.
Still weird, and it gets weirder. So then the next is Sir Bruce Ingham, who was a close friend of archaeologist Howard Carter. So Carter apparently gifted him a mummified hand with a bracelet on it, wearing a scarab bracelet, and the bracelet said, "Cursed be he who moves my body. To him shall come fire, water, and pestilence." Right? This was written on the bracelet.
Why would you ever take that mummy hand?
So the guy was using it as a paperweight because, of course, he was.
Some
of course.
And actual hand.
So shortly after getting that gift, his house lit on fire, like burned down to the ground. And then he rebuilt it. And shortly after he rebuilt the house, a major flood came in and destroyed his house.
Oh,
the thing is, though, Ingham isn't as dumb as some people, and he threw away the hand. So he never got the pestilence part, luckily.
Yeah.
But I think this is the one out of all these, I think, is the hardest to explain away as anything, because house burns down, you have the fire, the water. And then I imagine if he kept it, he probably got in the pestilence too.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the next person.
I just can't get over the fact that they took the mummy's hand.
Oh, yeah, no. And then I can't get over the fact that he not only took the mummy's hand, but was like, let me use this as a paperweight on my desk.
Because that's a real person's hand.
Yeah, I know. That's disgusting. Like, why would you want that?
And that should be, like, in a case somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's gross. Mummy hand? I don't need that. I don't need to see that.
I don't want that.
Okay, so then this next one, I should have done more research on this, but the next one I also have a little hard time linking to the curse. But Prince Ali Hamal Fami Bey, so he visited King Tut's tomb, and within that same year, he was assassinated. From the limited research I did about him, because I had so many people to cover, it didn't really seem like there was much motivation to assassinate him. So I think but this is the one that could be the most coincidental out of all of them.
So, was he famous?
Yeah, he was a prince, an Egyptian prince.
Oh, wait, okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, so then the next one, and then this is what also is crazy. So then the same year, Sir Lee Stack, who was a governor of Sudan, visited the same year and also just met with a violent death.
Interesting.
And this one's freaky. So there was this guy, Aubrey Herbert. He was a British MP. I think that was military police. I'm not really sure what that meant. But shortly after visiting the tomb, he went blind. And then shortly after he went blind, he died of blood poisoning. And if that's coincidental, you know, it's a really weird coincidence of the blood poisoning. What? Guess who his brother was?
Who?
Lord Carnarvon.
And oh my God.
After Herbert entered the tomb, what he said was, "Something dreadful is going to happen to our family."
That's crazy.
There's another.
Could he have a reason to get blood poisoning? Like what?
I don't. Well, we're going to get into the possible reasons later, but he wasn't like weak. He didn't have a compromised immune system like his half brother did, right?
All right.
So it's just interesting. And this one is pretty crazy, but I have an explanation for it that they didn't go over any of the research I did, but what I think it probably is so the next one is Sir Archibald Douglas Reed. So he's the guy who conducted the initial x-rays of King Tut's body. And he went on to die of a mysterious illness that doctors couldn't diagnose, like in the original thing. What I'm thinking is, we didn't really know the dangers of radiation until about the 50s, like post post Hiroshima. So I'm almost thinking that they just didn't know how to diagnose radiation poisoning back then.
Yeah.
But that one really emboldened the myth, because people are like, oh my God, this guy didn't even go there. He just handled the body and he died mysteriously.
Weird.
Yeah. Okay, so this one is freaky too. So then the next guy, H.E. Evelyn White. He was an archaeologist who was on the first team of explorers into King Tut's tomb, right? He's not like the tomb. So this is the crazy thing. He hung himself and wrote, "I have succumbed to a curse."
Oh my God. That one's like too much.
However, there is an explanation, right, that could explain that is... You could be reading into the curse too much. So apparently, he had suffered a really tragic loss recently and was depressed. So one interpretation is that the curse was referring to his depression and not to the curse of the pharaoh.
Uh-huh.
But still.
Still.
This one I don't have any information about, but George Bennett, he was like of the Louvre Museum in France. He just died in 1926 after visiting the excavation site of the tomb. They didn't really give it. I couldn't really find any information about how he died, but he just died.
Seriously.
Yeah. And then Aaron Ember, another Egyptologist, died in a freak accident. Okay. This one's kind of freaky. So the tenth person who's linked to this curse is A.C. Mace. He took over for Howard from 1924 to 1928. And while he was excavating and making discoveries, but the weird thing is the longer he stayed on site, the weaker he became. And then finally in 1928, he collapsed and died. And what's weird is he was pronounced dead in the same hospital that Lord Carnarvon died in. So I'm almost wondering if maybe they have some really shitty hospital care there, but.
Well, Lord Carnarvon seems to be like the centerpiece.
Yeah. All these people are connected to him.
Yeah.
So then there's two more. Richard Bethell.
Mm-hmm.
So Richard Bethell was Howard Carter's personal secretary, and he was present when the tomb was opened, right? So he was there. And he was found just mysteriously smothered to death in his bed in 1929.
Smothered
and then later that month, his dad jumped to his death from a 7-story apartment building. And his apartment was filled with artifacts from their dig site.
Ooh.
Yeah. And the final person to die was Lord Carnarvon's second half-brother, who died of malarial pneumonia that same year. I don't know if he actually was on site, but Lord Carnarvon's siblings just died mysteriously.
Ugh, but you do not want to be related to Lord Carnarvon.
No, you don't. So these are some of the explanations. The first was this is the one that's more widely accepted. Then we're gonna get into the really exciting one that came out soon. But modern scientists. So the explanation that is an American Egyptologist went to a different tomb and got really sick and died, and the federal like the U.S. government, I think it's the FDA, made them do testing, and they found all these molds and bacteria on these artifacts that if you have a weakened immune system, would just kill you.
Interesting.
So what they think what actually happened is Carnarvon and his like brothers probably all had really shitty immune systems and were exposed to it and died. But that doesn't explain, the one that's really freaky is like the house. So this is where it gets really interesting. A recent book is suggesting is that, so there was this famous Satanist who lived in the UK where all these people live. There's this guy, Aleister Crowley. He was a known Satanist and he lived there. And basically he was like a pagan. He believed in the occult and he worshiped the Egyptian gods, right?
Okay.
So there's this new theory that he might have been so offended by them opening up the tomb that he enacted the curse himself. Like he was killing these people, right?
Oh.
So that would explain the smothering. That would explain the house burning down. I don't know. I just, the one thing though, that one is, how do you explain the flood? Like, did he blow up a dam? That would seem like terrorism. I don't think he did that. But that's a really interesting one. I would dive deeper into that, but I learned about that last night and there's a whole book on it. But that's could be an interesting topic to go into. There could have been a guy fulfilling the curse himself.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What year was this?
This was between 1922 and like 1929.
Okay.
So like post-World War I, pre-World War II. And
that's very interesting.
The one interesting thing too is that there's another explanation too is that there's a theory that Carter might have fabricated the whole myth of the Pharaoh's curse to discourage tomb raiders because he died like 30 years after this all. So it's really hard to argue that the curse got him because he died 30 years later and everyone else died early on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the one thing that's kind of fishy with the story is everyone involved died like within between 1922 and 1929, except for Carter.
Maybe he was doing it.
Maybe. You'd think that if there was a real curse, that the guy who discovered and first disrupted King Tut would be the one who would be struck down first.
But, you know, that would probably make him suffer more if everyone in his family was dying.
True. If he thought that if he thought that he was next and just died naturally,
yeah,
that'd actually be worse torture. Just living out the rest of your life thinking, like, what's going to get me next?
What's going to get me and what have I done to my family?
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. That's a very valid point. Then another interesting about mummies and mummy curses is the whole idea of mummies coming back from the dead. It's not an Egyptian thing. That's English stuff they made up.
It's like a movie.
Yeah, it's like movies. That never was part of their like tradition that you come back to life as a mummy.
Yeah, well, they believed in reincarnation, didn't they?
I think so. I don't remember. But I think it's a little different with pharaohs because pharaohs were seen as gods.
Yeah.
So I don't think gods get reincarnated. But
And they definitely don't get reincarnated as a mummy.
Oh, yeah, like, definitely. They would get reincarnated as another pharaoh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I was just going to ask you how you think mummy curses actually happen.
I mean, I think in this case, there's a lot of coincidences. I think that because there's Alistair Campbell guy who happened to be an occultist who worshipped the Egyptian gods and lived where all these killings were happening, all these like deaths were happening. Uh-huh. I really think that the curse of the pharaohs could be involved with him in some way, which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, my weird thing with it where I sort of feel like mummy curses could exist is I just feel like that happened so, so long ago that you don't know, like, what was going on back then.
Yeah, that's true.
Egypt was so long ago. That was 3,000 years ago when King Tut was laid to rest.
Yeah.
And so my tunes changed a little bit about this next story that I looked into with curses, but I sort of have always felt like it's got to be thousands of years old before I buy it. This next one is too freaky to not be.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about James Dean, the actor's car, Little Bastard. It was a Porsche 500, 550, right?
Uh-huh.
And So he was driving a 3-something, and he was in his first big movies. He was able to buy his Porsche. I think he wanted to be like a race car driver as well. He was only 24 years old, and basically,
the car?
No, he was only 24 when he died.
Oh.
And so basically, what happened was September 30th, 1955. So they're using the car for a movie, I believe. It was him and his stuntman, who was a German. Whatever the term is, it's not the W. I'm going to slaughter the words. I'm just going to skip it. And basically, he built Porsches and was like a stunt driver. So they were driving together. And basically, he was like, you should break this car in. You got to break the engine in, all that stuff. So they're driving on the highway. So at first, they went to get coffee, right? And then they left. And they drove 65 in a 55. And they got a ticket for that. Thank God you can drive 65 in a 55 in 2020 without getting a ticket. So they first, yeah, they got a ticket. And then I guess they stopped for drinks and they went, and there James Dean was driving 88 miles an hour, got into a head-on collision with a Ford Tudor coupe, and James Dean died instantly. His stunt driver was launching the car, died. The guy who he hit head-on got his little scratch on his nose and was fine. And so then this guy, George Barris, purchases the wreck of Little Bastard for $2,500. And
he purchases the destroyed car.
Yes, this destroyed car, right?
Okay.
And it slips. So while they're loading it, it slips off the trailer and breaks the mechanic's leg.
Oh.
And then, okay. So then it's in the possession of George Barris, right?
Okay.
So he sells the engine and the drivetrain to Troy McHenry and William Eshred, right? Eshred, I think. Eshred, I don't know how to pronounce the name. And the two of them used it to build their own cars. And when they were racing each other with their own custom cars using these parts, Henry lost control of his car, slammed into a tree, and instantly died. And Eshred's wheels locked up for no reason, and his car slid out, and he was seriously injured but did not die.
Ooh.
And then there was these two other tires from Little Bastard that George Barris eventually sold to someone, they didn't specify who was, and while that person was driving, both the tires from Little Bastard exploded and they ran off the road.
Exploded?
The tires popped.
Wow.
Yeah.
That doesn't just happen.
No, it doesn't just happen. There's something really weird about this car, right? And then, I don't know if that person died, they never said, right? Later when the wreckage of Little Bastard that wasn't sold was being hauled on a flatbed. It was being hauled somewhere else. The driver got into a car accident while driving the truck, was launched from his truck, and the Porsche fell on him and crushed him to death.
Wow.
Yeah. And then eventually the car was hidden away in a mysterious room because, like, by Barris hid the car away in a mysterious room because, like, this is fucked up. Not mysterious, a hidden room. Mysterious room would be an interesting place to put it. But Barris hides this car in a hidden room because he's like, no one should have access to this vehicle. It's too dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was like in a garage, I guess. The garage burned down. The car was untouched.
What?
Yeah. And then I guess later on, it was used in a highway safety exhibition at a high school. And the exhibition quickly ended when the car slipped off the stage and broke a kid's hip.
Oh, my God.
And finally, this is where it's real freaky. Finally, the car and the truck hauling it vanished in 1960, and no one knows where it went.
It just disappeared?
The truck that was hauling it and Little Bastard just vanished in 1960.
Wow.
And there have been reports since of people owning Little Bastard, but nothing's been... Porsche has like looked at it and nothing's been verified that it was that car. So Little Bastard can be out there. For all you know, if you have a used old Porsche 550, could have Little Bastard's car.
So this is not a mummy curse.
No, this is just, I don't know what kind of curse this is, but this is just, I just feel like it's really hard to chalk this one up to mere coincidence based on the amount of people that died associated with this car and pieces of this car being put in their cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This one freaked me out a bit.
So
I don't drive that kind of car.
My question is, did the guy buying the wreck of Little Bastard, did he buy it because it was James Dean's car or just because it was a cool car?
I think because it was James Dean's car.
Okay.
I think that's why. Because he was really famous. Because he died right in his prime. He was just coming up when he died. And I assume it's that reason. But it's just crazy. The amount of people, even the mechanics and stuff, who got injured with it. Mm-hmm. It's like, sure, if this was... like, you could throw all these at me, and they'd be different cars. Like, this is all mere coincidence. But it just seems too coincidental that everyone who's interacted with this got either injured or died.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's like no one got minor injuries either. It's like a broken hip. I mean, they didn't really say, but the guy whose tires burst, they said he didn't die, but I can't imagine he did too well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that maybe it was James Dean's ghost.
Maybe, but that's just freaky.
It's really freaky. So I will not be getting that car.
Yeah, no classic Porsches for me either. That's a little too much.
Yeah, too much.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are probably other curse stories. Those are the only two I really, like, that really stood out to me in my little research the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a little wild, a little crazy.
I love a good curse.
All right. So that's it for curse talk. I guess we're going to end the episode now.
Yeah. So remember to come back every Thursday, you guys. Mm-hmm. We have new episodes, and we also have a blog at misfitsandmysteries.com, so check that out.
Make sure you like, subscribe, leave a review, let us know what we're doing. And next week is going to be our Halloween special, so make sure to submit some suggestions. We're definitely going to talk about Halloween specials next week. I don't know if we're going to do ghosts again. We might do, like, monsters or something new, but we will see.
If you guys have any suggestions, let us know on Twitter or Instagram at podcast_misfits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also check out our YouTube. We're now on YouTube. It's just, I think it's just Misfits and Mysteries.
Yeah.
Yeah. We now have YouTube videos. So if you want to watch our voices instead of just hearing them, you can do that too.
All right, guys. Stay spooky out there.
Stay spooky.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.